Memories of You, a look back at an icon. I'm Michael Thomas Jr. for Music Spotlight on Radio Free Phoenix. Throughout his many years in show business, actor and comedian Tom Dreesen has made over 500 appearances on national television as a stand-up comedian, including more than 60 appearances on The Tonight Show, where he was even a favorite guest of David Letterman, even frequently hosting the show in Letterman's absence. And in addition to Mr. Dreesen's success, he's also had the distinct pleasure and honor touring across the country as the opening comedic act for Frank Sinatra, where he appeared in acts around the country in the hottest venues from Las Vegas, Lake Tahoe, Reno, Atlantic City, and many more, with many known artists in addition to the likes of Sinatra from Smokey Robinson, Liza Minnelli, Natalie Cole, Sammy Davis Jr., and many more. And as he approaches nearly 50 years in show business, Tom Dreesen has no sign of slowing down, currently appearing across the country in his acclaimed one-man show, An Evening of Laughter and Memories of Sinatra, where he showcases his saloon comedic style, to which Sinatra even described it, just as Sinatra was that of a singer, a saloon singer. We had the pleasure of speaking with Mr. Tom Dreesen, who recently appears in the award-winning Leo Zahn-directed documentary, Sinatra Palm Springs, which focuses on Sinatra's generosity and the devotion to Sinatra's craft as we look back at the legend and icon who passed away 20 years ago this month.
Frank Sinatra never wanted anybody to know how generous he really was. You know, I mean, sometimes you couldn't hide it when you go to a charity and people know that he's doing a show or for the charity. But he would send money anonymously. He didn't want people to know how much he donated. He didn't want people to know about that. And there's a reason for that. There's a book many years ago that was written called The Magnificent Obsession by Lloyd C. Douglas. Its predecessor was a book called Dr. Hudson's Secret Journal. And I know Frank Sinatra read both those books. And in it is a secret of success. If you want to become a dentist, if you want to become a brain surgeon, if you want to become a comedian, if you want to become a singer, whatever it is, that once you ask your master, you have to honestly believe that ask and you shall receive. And Frank believed that fervently. Once you ask, you have to believe that ask and you will receive. However, in the book, The Magnificent Obsession, that later became a movie, in the book it says, once you ask and you believe that you're going to receive, then from that point on, you have to keep your eyes and ears open for his less needy, his children that are needy and less privileged than you have been. So, and you have to help them quietly and privately. If you do that within 30 days, your master will reward you towards your endeavor. So that's in the book. It's called Dr. Hudson's Secret Journal and the Magnificent Obsession. And Frank not only believed that, he talked that talk, he walked that talk. He helped people anonymously all the time and in ways that I can't even tell you. You know, Frank picked up a newspaper and read that some family living in Albuquerque, New Mexico in a boxcar and had 10 kids and one of the children needed brain surgery and they were poor. Somehow, the next day, someone would be at that boxcar telling the family that the surgery is all taken care of, and a person delivering the check to that didn't know where it came from either, because Frank didn't want people to know that.
Unbelievable. Yeah. So he would just find ways and outlets to facilitate that, because obviously, you know, not being known is a sort of, it was ever giving in that sense.
It's biblical in nature, but, you know, yeah. You cast your bread, what you sow, you shall reap, all that stuff. He believed that, you know, and I tell another story that I've told many times, that we were coming out of the Waldorf Astoria one night on our way to a gig. We went out the back door in New York because he had an apartment back there. And we were rushing to the limo to go to a gig, and there was a woman jumped out of the doorway. The bellman told me she had been hiding there for 5 hours, and she started screaming, "Mr. Sinatra, please, Mr. Sinatra, please, please, Mr. Sinatra." And the security grabbed her and held her back, and Frank got to the limo, and he turned around, and she kept yelling, and Frank went back, and he said, "What is it? What can I help you with?" She said, "My husband is home sick, and if you could sign an autograph, it would mean the world to him. It would mean everything to me. He's very ill." Frank said, "Sure," and he signed the autograph, And she said, oh, what beautiful cufflinks. They were $2,000 cufflinks. I know where he got them at. He said, thank you. And when he finished the autograph, he took the cufflinks off and gave them to her and said, give these to your husband. She said, no, I don't want them. I was just admiring them. He said, I know, but I want your husband to have these. When we got in the limousine, I said to him, Frank, that was beautiful, but why did you do that? He said, Tommy, if you possess something that you can't give away, then you don't possess it. It possesses you.
Wow.
And I never forgot that. And he believed that. He believed that material things, you're just using them. He told me one time, he said, Tommy, when Aristotle Onassis, this multi-billionaire, dies, everything that he has transfers. That wasn't his mansion. He was only using it. It wasn't his yacht. He was only using it. It wasn't his private plane. He was only using it. The shirt on your back, the second you die, that transfers. So we don't own anything. We're only using it. You know, and he believed that, you know, and that was the philosophy of Frank Sinatra.
Absolutely. I mean, it's something that a lot of people just don't sit and think about, in the sense of, especially someone that, like him, have amassed success and, of course, obtained a lot of, you know, things that you really don't need, but you enjoy. And, of course, you know, just simplest, you know, looking at it very simply. But of course, it's something that people don't look simply. So it's one of those things. Do you think that, you know, now that we approach next week, hard to believe 20 years, that more of the good of what he did, you know, sort of, obviously, you know, there's a lot of that hearsay with anytime you have a, you know, you're a large public figure, everyone wants to always focus on what comes with the most baggage. And do you think that now that you're surprised now, you're hearing a lot of the great work that he did, especially the 1962 World Tour? A lot of people didn't really talk about that up until recently. You know, those type of things that he gave, and of course that was more public.
Well, you know, if Wayne Dyer, who wrote the book Pulling Your Own Strings and The Erroneous Zones, do you know who Wayne Dyer is, the famous, he was a motivational speaker.
Yes.
And wrote many books, you know. But he once said something that I never forgot. He said, 50% of the people you meet in your life aren't going to like you. Not for anything you said or did. They're just not going to like you. 50% of the people you meet in your life. So if you expose yourself, you live in a town of 500 people, chances are, you know, maybe a couple hundred won't like you. They won't actively campaign against you or anything.
Yeah.
But they just won't like. But imagine when you expose yourself to hundreds of millions of people. You know, so no matter when you accomplish anything in life, you're going to pick up critics along the way. Frank Sinatra certainly had his critics. You know, there were people that adored Frank Sinatra, worshiped the ground he walked on, and there were people who just hated him with a passion. So they're always going to find some reason to dislike, and you can't do anything about that. You know, you're not in charge of your reputation. Other people are. You're in charge of your character. That's what you are responsible for. You're not responsible for your reputation. Other people will create that for you. You know, it's your character you're responsible for. So, you know, he certainly, for those that he did great deeds for, like me, you know, he'll never be forgotten, you know, for those who could care less. You know, I'll tell you something interesting. Kitty Kelly wrote a book years ago called The Unauthorized Biography of Frank Sinatra, you know, My Way.
Unfortunately.
And it was a garbage book with a bunch of innuendos and gossip, and the rarity was there a fact in there. But a guy from the New York Times wrote an interesting review of it. He said, this book won't be bought by Sinatra haters. Sinatra haters wouldn't spend 10 cents to read anything about him. It's going to be bought by people who can't seem to get enough of Frank Sinatra. They just can't get enough. And it won't change their opinion of him one way or the other because they're Frank Sinatra fans. And that's the truth. In the end, those who love them will always love him. Those who were moved by his music or by his kind deeds will continue to love him. And those who didn't wouldn't take time to think about him for 5 seconds, you know.
Yeah, that's a beautiful way to look at it. And, of course, you in your story, comedic career, and of course you do a lot of discussions, and tell us more about, you know, briefly what your program is about and what you do, you know, across the country when you tell stories.
Well, I'm doing a one-man show. It's called An Evening of Laughter and Stories of Sinatra, but I'm a stand-up comedian. This is my 48th year in show business of being a stand-up comedian. So I do stand-up comedy. I do theaters with this show. and I do it for corporate events and things like that. But the theater goes dark. There's Sinatra music playing in the theater prior to, well, people are filing into their seats. And then when it's showtime, the theater goes dark, and on the big screen, Dennis Farina narrates 3.5 minutes of my life, you know, of where I've, you know, from my years growing up in Chicago to the going into the military to coming out of the military and becoming a part of a comedy team, America's first black and white comedy team. Tim Reed and I were the first black and white comedy team in history of show business and the last. Then it shows how I segue out of there in the film to the Tonight Shows to touring with Sammy Davis Jr. and Smokey Robinson, all these people, to eventually touring with Frank Sinatra. And then when the film is over, I come walking out and I do stand-up comedy for 20, 25 minutes. And then I segue over to a bar on the stage that has a bottle of Jack Daniels on it because that was Frank's drink of choice, you know. And I tell a funny story at the bar. And while the audience is laughing, all the lights go out. And on the screen, Frank Sinatra is singing, "It's 2:45, there's no one in the place except you and me." And so I let that mood in. When he gets to the chorus, "Make it one for my baby and one more for the road," the light hits me, and now the audience is in a bar with me, and I've come home. And I tell them the first time I heard that voice, I was shining shoes in a bar on the south side of Chicago, and he was on the jukebox. I was a little boy shining shoes in a bar, and he was on the jukebox. And then I take the audience from that little boy hearing Sinatra on the jukebox on the south side of Chicago to one day carrying his coffin out of a church in Beverly Hills, California. And I take them on that journey. And while I'm telling stories about him, pictures are coming on the screen, authenticating the story that I'm telling, as well as film of Frank and I together. And I take them on a journey, have them laughing, and then I take them to the funeral, and I have them in tears. And then I turn right around and close with a funny monologue, and I have them laughing. And then in the end, I take that Jack Daniels, and I toast them, and I say, "I wish for all of you what Frank should have to wish for you, the very last song that he ever sang, is that the best is yet to come." And I say, "Good night, everybody." And as they're leaving the theater, Frank is singing, "The best is yet to come," you know. And so we leave him on a high, you know.
And with all that, I mean, of course, people can, in order to see the show, you can go to TomDreesenComic.com, right?
No, you can go to TomDreesen.com.
Okay.
It's my website. It's Dree. S-E-N. Everybody spells my name wrong, but no. It's Tom, Dreesen.com.
Yes.
And it'll always tell you where I'm appearing.
I'm getting confused with your Instagram. It's Tom Dreesen Comic.
I think that's my Twitter account, I think.
I saw you on Instagram by that, too. Is that you, or is that still
you? That's okay. Instagram, too. Okay. Yeah, my daughter, who is supposed to be up on all the social media, got me going on all the social media. And, you know, because I'm an old school kind of guy,
sure.
But I end up following a lot of it. It's a full-time job, you know, Facebook and Twitter and Instagram and all the other things. It's a full-time job.
Do you have someone helping you at least with that? Kind of getting,
pardon me?
Do you at least have someone helping you get to the sharing all your, is your daughter helping you?
Oh, yeah. My daughter tries to help me with it. She's really good, you know.
Yeah, because I love sharing. You know, obviously, I want to share all these stories with people on your social media pages and everything, because you have a lot of stories. I'm very familiar with your work, and of course, lastly, I just thank you very much for your time. Did you give the eulogy at Sinatra's funeral?
I was one of the speakers. There were many. You know, it was Gregory Peck and Kirk Douglas. There was his and there was Robert Marks, Barbara, and son, and his son Frank Sinatra Jr., who gave an eloquent speech about his father, you know. And there was Robert Wagner, you know. And I told a funny story in the church and broke the church up, only because I knew that Frank would want me to make them laugh. You know, I just could hear in his brain every night. You know, I toured with him for 14 years in 45, 50 cities a year, and every night before the show, he might say to me, "Tom, are you going on?" And I said, "Be funny and be brief." I could hear that. You know, I say, "Be funny and be brief," you know. So as when I was at the church and I had to go out there, I emceed it as well. But I had that going in my brain, be funny and be brief. So I told a funny story in the church. It broke everybody. One more last thing I want to say about Frank Sinatra. That most people know that arguably he's the greatest pop singer of all time. What they don't think about sometimes is what a brilliant actor he was. you know, that he won the Academy Award in From Here to Eternity. But what about a movie called The Man with the Golden Arm? What about a movie called Suddenly? What about a movie called Von Ryan's Express and The Manchurian Candidate? Over 60 films. He was a brilliant actor and never once took an acting lesson. I once sat with him, Gregory Peck, Clint Eastwood, Robert Wagner, Kirk Douglas, excuse me, at Frank's house. And, excuse me. And they were talking about acting and directing, and I noticed that these learned actors, Kirk Douglas, Gregory Peck, all of them were showing such reverence to Frank Sinatra about acting. And I curiously thought, you know, because I studied acting in Chicago and I studied acting out here in L.A., I wondered who he studied with. And I said to Frank, who did you study acting with? And Gregory Peck grabbed my arm and said, acting lessons would have ruined him. He was a diamond in the rough you didn't fool with. Frank never took an acting lesson and won the Academy Award. My point of that is, when you gave Frank Sinatra a song, to him it was a script. What was the writer thinking when the writer took pen in hand? What was he feeling when he took pen in hand? And Frank would immerse himself in that lyric and become that lonely guy in the bar whose woman left him, and he's never going to find love.
But
again, he felt that pain.
That was the one thing that drew people in. He mainstreamed the Great American Songbook, and he made people believe every lyric, every phrase, every word he was saying. He lived that. He wouldn't do songs because he didn't live that. You know, he didn't understand that lyric. He couldn't make the people understand. I think that really transcended. I think as someone that's great at delivering lyrics and great words and through music, especially a person that could not read music as well, was able to be a phenomenal actor. So, and of course, all the work he did, civil rights, of course, he was, you know, won a special Academy Award for The House I Live In. So there's so much to be said about what he was as an all-around entertainer and someone that you could believe. So,
well, I used to watch him night after night, and when he'd do The House I Live In, it was an amazing piece of work, and the way he portrayed that song and the way he sang that song, it was, you know, what is America to me? And it was really moving night after night. And when he would get to that part, but especially the people, all the lights would come on in the arena, 20,000 people, and he'd go, the people, the people, the people, and it would bring chills. It'd make the hair on the back of your neck stand up, you know, the way he interpreted lyrics. For all the young singers out there that want to know about him, know this, that whenever he got a song, he would read it over and over and over as a poem. First as a poem, and embrace the lyrics as a poem, and then go sing it. You know, you will be my music. You will be my song. You know, when all the songs are out of tune and all the rhymes ring so untrue, then you will be my music. You know, he'd read it as a poem and then go sing it.
Incredible insight to be able to work alongside that. And it couldn't be from a better, more talented person such as you, Tom. Thank you so much for your time. To find out more information where you can catch An Evening of Laughter and Memories of Sinatra, you can check out TomDreesen.com and, of course, follow him on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram to hear more great stories. He loves talking to his fans. Just incredible insight to hear more about his music. And Tom is completely hilarious and has so much, just so much stories to tell. He's the perfect guy to listen to talk about anything during from his time growing up in Chicago and being a Cubs fan, and just a true trailblazer. With Music Spotlight, I'm Michael Thomas Jr. on Radio Free Phoenix.
Everything seems to bring